Good morning. This is Alice Hamilton from Hudson Mohawk Indie Media Radio on WRPI Troy, and we're lucky to have Alex Knott from the Center for Public Integrity. Alex is the political editor and the project manager for Lobby Watch, and he's going to be filling us in today on what a great tool this is for Lobby Watch is for both investigative journalists and for concerned citizens. So good morning, Alex.
Hey, thanks for having me on today.
And I wanted to have you start out just by giving a little background on the Center for Public Integrity.
Sure. The Center for Public Integrity is an investigative group that does journalism. Most of the people that are working here, it's about almost 40 people, do journalism. They came from newspapers and such, and it was started about 15 years ago by a guy named Chuck Lewis, who used to be a producer for 60 Minutes, and now it's currently run by Roberta Baskin, who also has a broadcast background.
And why don't you tell us why you developed Lobby Watch, or maybe give us some background on what lobbying is?
Sure. Well, lobbying is really a situation where you hire somebody to go and represent your interest in Washington. And many times people are trying to understand, well, what's that like, you know? Well, there are approximately 22,000 companies and organizations out there, special interests. They're trying to get bills passed through Congress. They're also lobbying the 220 agencies that exist. These would be everything from the FDA to the Office of the White House to Dick Cheney's office to possibly the U.S. Trade Representative and so forth and so on. Every agency that's out there and regulates things, there's a lobbyist that's trying to influence them. There's even lobbyists that tried to lobby the U.S. Botanical Gardens. So everybody basically has an interest, and they're trying to push legislation and regulation through that process.
And it's actually legal.
Oh, it's completely legal. And as a matter of fact, it's guaranteed by the First Amendment, the right to free association and to petition your government is a First Amendment right, and it's almost a necessary component of legislation. These days, during the last congressional session, there were 7,000 bills between the House and the Senate. There's no way that a member of Congress can really know what's in each of those 7,000 bills. So a lot of times what they do is they weigh on the opinions of lobbyists, and that's because sometimes the lobbyist is the person that actually wrote the bill.
Oh, okay. I actually didn't always get that.
They write the legislation sometimes, right.
And so how does Lobby Watch work? What's in Lobby Watch?
We're not able to go and ask the Senate and the House for their records, but they do post many of them online. So we've basically developed some internet worms that we go and collect all this information for us. Then we took all the information and broke it down and corrected many of the mistakes and then put it up in a very web-friendly way so that people can, you know, look at Dick Cheney and see everybody that's lobbying, who's lobbying Dick Cheney. But they can look at an issue like gambling, seeing everybody who's lobbying on gambling. They can pull down a company like Philip Morris and see the amount of money they spent, the lobbyists they hired, or the lobbying firms that they hired, and really get down to the basics of lobbying. We're also looking at some campaign contribution things. We're looking at local governments that are lobbying the federal government. We're looking at foreign countries. You know, $620 million was spent by foreign companies that are lobbying our federal government. We look at compliance issues where we found that 20% of all forms are either filed late or not filed at all. We looked at the revolving door, which a lot of people are like, what's the revolving door? Well, revolving door goes to the heart of lobbying, and it shows that that many of the lobbyists that are out there, 2,200, have former positions that they had with the U.S. government, which allows them not only a familiarity with the topic, but with the people, so they can actually help get regulations and legislation passed through Congress.
So this is all based on disclosure forms that are...
It,
okay. And what actually has to be disclosed in the disclosure forms by a lobbyist?
Well, the amount that they spend is supposed to be disclosed. The people that are employed, the lobbyists, are supposed to be disclosed. Who they lobbied, what agency out of the 220 agencies out there, that's supposed to be put down. The bills that they lobbied on, the issues that they lobbied on, and, of course, the time and frequency by which they lobbied, all these things are supposed to be on the form, including certain things like addresses and things of that nature, so the company name also, and the lobbying firm. So those are all things that need to be disclosed on the form. They come out every 6 months, and which a lot of people are criticizing because they don't think it's frequent enough, because somebody could start lobbying something on January 2nd, and the first that you'll find out about that is in September or October, way after the bill passes.
Now, does anybody audit these?
No, they really don't. That's evidenced by close to 20% of the forms. Let's put it this way. Out of the top 50 lobbying firms out there, 49 are missing at least one form. So there are 49 of the top 50 lobbying firms that are out of compliance. They just many times don't bother to send in the forms or make mistakes. But nonetheless, nobody is calling them to task on it.
So it's all kind of self-reportage.
Right. It's kind of like people filling out forms after everything's done, and many times it gets there, and many times it doesn't. And since nobody's really clamping down on them, there's no reason for them to really change their actions. Let's put it this way. Everybody talks about campaign finance and all the money that's going to elect members of Congress and such. Well, about two times that amount is spent lobbying the federal government each year. And to track campaign finance, you have 391 people employed at the FEC, and they're bringing down an annual budget of about $52 million a year. In contrast, you have nine people going through all the lobbying forms, which, again, is two times what is spent on campaign finance. Nine people over 391 people, and only a couple $100,000 for their budget. So it's very difficult for them to stay on top of things.
So who does lobbying? I was sort of surprised when I pulled down, top 100 lobbyists.
Sure. It's interesting to see. A lot of times it's your counties and your state is spending your state and local tax money to lobby your federal government, spending your local tax dollars to go after your federal tax dollars. What's interesting is sometimes you'll see that everybody's trying to figure out this thing with steroids and baseball. Well, Bud Selig and Major League Baseball have spent almost $10 million lobbying our federal government during the last 6 years. And it's just that. The NFL lobbies, you name anything that makes money.
Well, number one was the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
And basically, they lobby everybody on behalf of business interests. You'll see a lot of defense contractors who are listed in our top top 100 companies and organizations on our website. One of the things that people are always trying to figure out, donations and such, what lobbying is like, to put this into an analogy so that people actually understand, it's kind of like if somebody were to try to get you to do something, like let's say somebody wanted to get you to buy a house. Well, instead of giving you money and such, what they would do is they would hire your friends to get you to buy this house. They could, hire somebody to from your PTA to tell you how how the schools are great. Maybe your uncle who's a law enforcement official tell you how crime is low and other things like that. By the end of the game, they could get you to buy that house. Well, the same thing happens with the legislature and Congress. What they do is they hire former coworkers and people that they respect, people that they talk to on a very frequent basis. And they go in and they tell them about these bills and they tell them about this legislation, and slowly they build a consensus. So if you pay enough people that are former colleagues and now lobbyists, you can buy a consensus and thus push forth a bill.
So that's why 2,000 members of Congress that go to lobbying firms are well-placed, actually.
Right. There have been 2,200 former federal government officials, many of them from Congress, 250 former members of Congress and agency heads that are a part of that number. So, yeah, that's why a lot of these people have these positions.
And this is Hudson Mohawk Indie Media Radio, and we're interviewing Alex Knott, who's the project manager for Lobby Watch, which is a really great tool that was developed by the Center for Public Integrity, who try to come up with really great tools like this for investigative journalists or for concerned citizens. And he's talking about Lobby Watch. So there's a lot of just things, really neat things you can find out by hitting on your different tabs and doing a search. What are some of the major findings that the Lobby Watch has helped you find out?
Well, it's odd because what it'll help you do is cross-reference things that you would never, consider. Like you wouldn't expect the New York Library to be lobbying on gambling, but they did. You wouldn't expect PricewaterhouseCoopers to be lobbying on the Patriot Act, but they did.
Why was that?
Well, there's certain parts of the Patriot Act that deal with international commerce, and that's one of the things that PricewaterhouseCoopers was interested in, and as such, they lobbied the Bush administration on it. One of the things that you can do is you can pull down your state and find out everybody that's lobbying the federal government from your state. You can pull down an agency and find out, who's lobbying everybody from the American Federation of ATF to possibly the EEOC or FEMA. You can see, what industries are active lobbying. The largest one is pharmaceutical that lobbies, and they're very active in lobbying.
Yeah, and some somewhat surprising connections, given one thing I saw that recently CAFTA having so narrowly passed in the House of Representatives, that actually pharmaceuticals did a lot of lobbying with the U.S. Trade Representative.
That's correct. You see, what happens a lot on this, as far as trade goes, trade's one of the, it's actually one of the top issues out there that gets lobbied. And as a matter of fact, it comes in at number 7 as the most lobbied issue in the federal government. And the countries that make up CAFTA spent something like $1.2 million lobbying our federal government over the years. And then you've got companies that are often from inside of America that are lobbying to get out and get their drugs, to other market venues. And Pfizer's one of the biggest organizations that is out there lobbying today.
And they were interested in getting rid of price controls?
We haven't been able to track down their actions on this bill because again, the forms still aren't due until September or October, but there have been echoes to that effect through the press.
Okay. And what about the oil industry? Recently, the energy bill just passed, and it certainly made me wonder what the oil industry had been up to.
Well,
as of late.
Energy is one of the top issues that gets lobbied on. As a matter of fact, it's the 10th most lobbied issue with 2,200 companies, almost 2,300 companies, lobbying on the issue during the last 6 years. And if you take all the different companies that are out there and all of their lobbying, it almost adds up to $1 billion, the entire energy industry, between the utilities and the miscellaneous energy groups and some of the mining. And, of course, some of the oil and fuel groups, almost $1 billion, which, to put into context, is about 1.5 times what it took to fund the presidential election, just the candidates.
Wow. that is pretty remarkable, actually. And I guess it's less surprising that the energy bill went through as it did.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, all the giveaways that were in that bill for all these energy companies, and we're not advocating for or against it, but most of the people they hooked on to, well, you know, we get an extra 2 months of daylight savings time, but really there was a lot of money that was given out in incentives and tax giveaways to many of the companies that lobbied.
So if you could improve Lobby Watch, how would you do that?
We're going to try to hook up some things in the future that will be pretty interesting. We're going to actually get the PDFs so that you can look and see what people actually lobbied on in their handwriting as they appear. Some of the things that we're going to be doing, trips. We're going to be putting up congressional trips and all the different interests that paid for the trip. So when you actually look at a company's lobbying records, you'll be able to see that the trips they paid for Congress, and believe it or not, the White House. In addition to that, we'll have donations from PACs given by these companies, all the revolving doors that exist, the number of lobbyists. It should be pretty interesting. One of the things that we're really looking forward to doing is during the winter months, we're going to do lots and lots of coding on, what people call coding or lots of computer work on contracts. We're going to show all the contracts the 22,000 companies that lobby have gotten from the federal government. And you'll be able to see, you know, what Lockheed Martin got from the EPA just by going to our site.
Wow, that does sound like a really amazing tool. Now, are these things accessible to an average citizen? Could they access this now through government?
They could, but it would take somebody who's very web savvy and really understands the system very closely. And there's a lot of mistakes in there that we try to go and fix. We basically, by getting the entire database and then recoding it, give the user and citizens, anybody who wants to get on our site, the ability to do things that weren't available before.
Like these kind of searches that you can
right.
do. Yeah.
Most people could not do this. It would take, you'd have to download about 2.5 million records to do it, which could take a few clicks of the mouse.
Maybe a few PCs.
Sure.
Wow. So that does sound like a really great service, and it sounds like there's even better things coming along. Are there any caveats on the database?
It's some of the things are a little bit difficult to understand, and the way the House and the Senate does their rules is a little odd. Sometimes we have to take what is a best guess at some numbers, and the missing records, nobody can account for that. There are huge gaps in the data because nobody's really making sure that these organizations file. And because you only have to file once every 6 months, instead of quarterly, like at when it comes to campaign contributions, there are really some holes that need that could be fixed by the government. And there's about four bills in Congress right now. There's not a lot of momentum behind them, but people are trying to fix the system.
And what are the bills? We want to wrap up pretty fast, but
sure.
What are the bills? And then we have to definitely give out the website because I think this is a great tool.
Thanks. Russ Feingold put forth a bill recently. There was a bill put forth by Emanuel and Marty Meehan in the House also. Some of these bills are starting to get just a little momentum, but mostly it's on the Democratic side that it's moving. But it could be the first step towards a change in legislation.
So increasing transparency, or?
Yeah, there are four areas, but mostly it deals with trips, transparency, more frequent reports. These reports are still being filed on paper, and then somebody has to punch them in. And as ridiculous as that sounds in our computer era, that's what's taking place, and they're trying to
fix that.
Well, that's
what those 9 employees do, I guess.
That's exactly it.
That's really wild. And why don't you end with any points that you wanted to add?
Sure. We're looking right now. We're currently running this. It's just a side project that the center does, and hopefully we can keep it going with some funding. We don't accept any money from corporations or anything, but we're trying to keep it going. Hopefully this will be a good service for people in the future, journalists and anybody that wants to find out who's affecting their government. It's one of the key things that are out there, and it's all part of like the democratic system, and people should really use it to understand their government.
Well, I want to thank you Alex, for being on the show and for developing this really nice tool that increases transparency in government. And people can access this at www.publicintegrity.org. That's PublicIntegrit. And thanks again, Alex.
I appreciate your time.